Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, it was a U.S. Open for the ages. Our picks were practically circling the leaderboard all week, and a Hollywood movie script was written again at the Country Club at Brookline, plus some LPGA drama and recapping my 36 holes in 18 hours and part four of our book club chat on that new scandalous Phil Mickelson book as well. We're tuned into live music and nature for Michael. And this week's guest, we've got trick shot master himself, Coach Rusty, on the show. He is living the dream and tells us all about his content. We finish with the Boston sports heartbreak, some weird golf course food and cake, when we always end with food as well. And all of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. Mike, we all know them as makers of the Phone Caddy, but they have an exciting new product coming very, very soon. So be sure to keep your ears and eyes peeled. For all those cigar aficionados and the guys who like to puff a nice stogie on the course, a wonderful cigar holder attachment's coming soon to the Desert Fox Phone Caddy. So not only can you have a great place to store your phone, you can also have a great place to store your cigar when you're out on the course. It's going to be a two-for-one great product soon. The Phone Caddy is already life-changing in and of itself, so check out desertfoxgolf.com and get yours today. Promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 10% off. Again, promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 10% at desertfoxgolf.com.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Toasty Snacks, and D3 Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, they were in our hometown's backyard there in Brookline at the Country Club just outside of Boston. Saw those beautiful Boston area homes that we know and love.
The skyline shots were plenty as well. Checking out the whole bay. It was nice to kind of like transport myself home for just a few days watching the golf. Yeah.
And the stars showed up and showed out all weekend. It was probably one of the most star-studded Sundays I think we could ask for, really over the course of the entire week. Rory, Rahm, Morikawa, Scottie Scheffler, Zalatoris, Fitzpatrick, hometown hero, Keegan Bradley, hometown, if you want to say that. He's really from Vermont, but he was treated as a hometown hero. And at the end of the day, Matthew Fitzpatrick, braces and all, takes the W and hoists the trophy and becomes the second person ever to win a U.S. Amateur and a U.S. Open on the same course.
Yeah, amazing kismet and karma working for Fitzpatrick there, 9 years removed after that amateur victory when he was just a gangly little teenager. Mike, I don't know how much footage you saw from 2013, but he's put on a few pounds since and gotten a lot older in his time, but he still loves the Country Club. And that was a cool storyline headed into the week that, oh yeah, Matthew Fitzpatrick, he kind of knows this course and he won the AM here. Oh, but that's not going to translate 9 years later, is it? Right? That's a Hollywood movie script. And lo and behold, it wrote itself. It's funny, Mike. We kept referencing last week The Greatest Game Ever Played, that movie about the young Francis we met and his companion caddy. That's kind of what the Fitzpatrick brothers looked like 9 years ago. And lo and behold, Fitzpatrick repeats the feat at the Country Club after all these years.
Yeah, and he did it. I almost thought we were going to have a repeat of the PGA when he hit his tee shot on the 72nd hole into the bunker. And he just got lucky with that lie and hit the shot of the tournament to put himself to just have to two-putt for par. To ended up winning, of course, then Will Zalatoris once again, a chance to win a major, or in this case, force a playoff, to have two straight major championship playoffs that he would be in, and he burned the edge. You know, he said what? That he's missed winning majors now by a combined like 1.5 inches or something. So
it's absurd. It's so strange crazy. The way golf works, because you and I remember like just a year and a half ago when Will Zalatoris was a Korn Ferry Tour guy that was just getting starts here and there. And like his world has been flipped upside down. So we don't necessarily need to cry any tears or have any sympathy for Will Zalatoris because his life is amazing right now and his golf has taken off. But the close calls he has had at majors recently are mind-blowing. He said, Mike, he's maybe an inch and a half or two, if you think about how close putts are to going in, with three runner-up finishes now, to having three major championships Unfortunately, he still has zero.
Yeah, he right now is maybe I'm gonna put the potential mantle on him of the greatest current, the best current player to not win a major.
Yeah,
we're gonna set that aside, and we'll talk more about that title later. But let's just talk about how last week, we forgot to mention that last week I had Rory McIlroy as my pick, who won the RBC Canadian.
That was good win, yep. Mm-hmm.
All three of my guys were in contention to win again this weekend. Zalatoris and Scottie Scheffler were bouncing up and down from first place all day on Sunday. And Matt Fitzpatrick just has to come along and win it away from them. And I'm a little peeved by that. I have to say, I'm a little peeved.
Yeah, I mean, you had the shark circling the boat all weekend long. I wanted to text you at about five or six different junctures and just be like, you know, your picks are like crazy good right now. But I already know you knew because you were just checking the leaderboard. And be like, how could this be that you would put yourself in this position again? And yes, Fitzpatrick definitely stole that W away from you on the major stage. The only bet that ended up hitting out of all of them, which I'm now making an automatic, is that Will Zalatoris top 10 bet, which I've placed two majors in a row now. I'm just going to do it for every single tournament he plays because the guy's just he can do no wrong except hoist the trophy, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. I think that's true. I think that, you know, he'll break through eventually. It's just a matter of when will the golf gods finally smile on him. And we don't really know. I did think it was impressive to see Scottie Scheffler after having that really horrible PGA championship come back and really contend here. And Keegan Bradley, you got to think that he's running out of chances to maybe win another major. This would have been maybe even the better storyline than Fitzpatrick winning, would to have Keegan Bradley hoist the trophy again and to do it in Boston.
Yeah, this is one of those where like he might pick like a U.S. Open in Boston, like over winning a green jacket. Like that's how much that might have went to him. And he was definitely doing it as the hometown guy. And you could see he felt the pressure coming into Sunday and had some early bogey slip ups. But fun to see a New Englander in the mix amidst the crazy, raucous Boston crowd. Knew a ton of people who were there, from friends to family and past guests as well, too. Hardy from 98.5, the Sports Hub, who we've had on, was there all week long and just said it was just a great take. A fantastic atmosphere for watching all week. And it's clear, we got to get this course on the regular rotation of U.S. Open for years to come.
Yeah, I just want more New England courses on the rotation in general on PGA Tour. We don't go there enough. We're going to be there 2 weeks in a row right now. We'll talk more about the stop in Connecticut coming up. But we just don't. They don't go into New England really at all. They really don't. So,
Hey, how about your? Let's get a little LIV Tour update since you're our correspondent officially.
So, of the 14 guys that have said they have or are going to play in the LIV Tour, four of them made the cut, and altogether they combined for 105 over par.
I knew you'd have that metric of exactly how over par they were. I knew you'd have that number ready.
You can go watch LIV Golf with the star power combined for 105 over par at the U.S. Open, or you can watch the PGA Tour and see guys like Zalatoris, Scottie Scheffler, Rory, Rahm, Morikawa, Fitzpatrick, you know, all these other guys who are actually playing great golf right now.
It's funny how the timing works, Mike, with all of the LIV hysteria spiking in the last 2 weeks, to have the weekend finishes that we had at the Canadian Open with the Rory JT duel. And then this past weekend at the United States Open with all of golf's greats names combining for an epic duel. Perfect timing and a nice big middle finger back from Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour, to Greg Norman saying, see, we still got the superior product. So they definitely stuffed it in their face for that one.
By the way, can we touch real quickly on Charles Barkley and what he said this week, that if he was offered $200 million, it doesn't matter where the money was coming from, he would kill a relative. And so he thinks it's fine that these guys are going to LIV Tour for all this money.
All right, Charles. That's a new extreme right there.
I wouldn't kill anybody for $200 million. But then again, we've established that I have morals and ethics. But
yes, I've got some, but less than you. So that's nice that your price isn't there. That's good.
Would you kill a family member for $200 million?
A family member? I'm going to say no. But if we go outside the family, I need some time to ponder that, Mike. Okay.
Okay. Don't incriminate yourself. That's all we're going to say. On top of all the fireworks we had at Brookline at the Country Club for the US Open, the LPGA did not disappoint either. The Maher LPGA Classic included a leaderboard with Nelly Korda, Lydia Ko, Jessica Korda, Lexi Thompson, Jennifer Kupcho, and Minjae Lee. I mean, this was loaded.
Yeah, Minjae Lee, the US Women's Open champion, who we just saw crush the field as well, too. Nelly Korda back in the mix again, just fresh off of that blood clot injury, coming back with a solid performance at Pine Needles, backing it up again. But she wasn't the one to get it done in the playoff, which was the surprise to me. I skipped over this because of the U.S. Open inning, came back after to see the highlights, and could have sworn I would have thought Nelly Korda would have been lifting this trophy, but that was not the case.
Yeah, you'd think Nelly would become the two-time defending champion there, but instead she was out first in the three-way playoff after the first hole. So it was Kupcho and Liana Maguire, and Kupcho took the win on the second hole. So, you know, the LPGA is worth watching every weekend, just like the PGA Tour is.
Yeah, and Jennifer Kupcho, for those who may remember, she won the first Augusta National Women's Amateur, the first time they had that a few years ago. And ever since then, she's propelled to a professional career that's served her very well. So congrats to her for getting on the board this week.
Let's look ahead to this next weekend. Like we said, they are staying in New England. They're headed to Connecticut for the Travelers. A lot of guys love this course on tour. Scottie Scheffler, Brooks Koepka, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas. This is always a fun weekend for the tour in general, and they'll be sticking around in New England.
Yeah, I freaking love this course. I say it every year, Mike. You know, I got some fond memories of our Connecticut days when I used to scoot over here. Went to the Wednesday Pro-Am and saw some great Sunday finishes here. I watched Bubba Watson win an epic playoff with a wedge at the 18th. You know what? It's just a cool TPC-style New England venue. A lot of twists and turns. People don't realize how much up and down there is in the state of Connecticut if you haven't driven through it. There definitely is highlands, and this is called TPC River Highlands for a reason. And Mike, you know this well. This finish with 15th through 18, it starts with a drivable par 4, 15th. There's a lot of fireworks there. There's water on 16 and 17, and 18 is a short par 4. It lends itself to a lot of drama, and it's always a good finish worth watching.
It really is. And we'll have our full picks out on Wednesday evening on Twitter. I'm going to, you know,
we're watching you right now. I kind of want to take your lead this week. I don't know.
I always wait for you to tell me that it's time to make my picks. And then I spend about 30 seconds researching and shoot one out. So
that seems to be working. Whatever you're doing,
shoot from the hip. That's what we do.
You're at MWRINC. I'm at Course of Life One on Twitter. And just a refresher, Mike, remember last year we had the marathon 8-hole playoff here that Harris English won. That went forever and ever. So hopefully we don't have a playoff that goes that long this weekend.
Hopefully not. But we'll see what happens. For now, let's return to the book club. We are still in Alan Shipnuck's Phil, the rip-roaring and unauthorized biography of golf's most colorful superstar. And he became much more colorful this year because we did chapters 8, 9, and 10. And this was really when Phil became arguably the best player on tour at the time.
And the personality really gets exuded in this part of the book. And I actually appreciated this part of the book because a lot of people are maybe questioning this Phil book and saying, oh, this is just a ramming device at Phil's PR right now. And there's nothing good to come from Phil Mickelson in this book. And that is absolutely not the case when you get to chapter 8, because it's all about the amazing buildup of his golf and his career. Obviously, plateauing at that moment with the 2004 Masters. We talked about it last week about him and getting a monkey off his back of finally winning that first major championship, and the flashbacks that 2004 Masters and all the memories started coming back reading through chapter 8. That was quite a way for him to get it done.
Yeah, you know, it was, you know, we read up to this about how Phil was constantly kind of going for the money shot, the high risk, high reward shot, and something maybe finally clicked. And I think a lot of it was probably watching Tiger just winning constantly for him to change his game plan and go in there and say, I'm going to win a major. I'm going to win a couple. You know, he wanted to win the whole Grand Slam. And he went ahead and changed his game plans through a lot of this and ended up taking the green jacket and a little more.
Yeah, very impressive stuff. And I'll always remember 18 years later, we are still joking about Phil Mickelson's vertical or lack thereof for the winning jump after that putt. And I'm glad that Shipnuck made note of that. He still did not remove much grass from that 18th green with that jump. But nonetheless, it was cool to see him finally throw that monkey off his back in Chapter 8.
Yeah, and in Chapter 9, of course, there was the rest of the majors in 04. I kind of forgot how much he was contending in every event and how on top of his game he really was.
Well, Mickelson had a chance in the Grand Slam in 2004. I do not remember that in my brain at all, but that is back in my mind. That was a real thing. Like, he had a legit chance to win all four majors. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I also completely forgot that he was a titleist guy in the beginning of his career and then decided to jump ship from them to go to Callaway because he wanted big money, big deal. He wanted to be the marquee player for a brand. And it turns out he wanted a brand that would make whatever he wanted. Callaway was more than willing to do that for him.
Asking you shall receive. He really dove into that deal and got the biggest check possible, which is a theme throughout his career. And then 04 also ended, people forget, with the Ryder Cup, where Hal Sutton decided to pair Tiger and Phil, which was a complete disaster and led to nothing good, and may have been a little bit of a precursor to the next few Ryder Cups after that. I forgot about that epically weird ending to this historic year for Phil.
Yeah, you know, we knew this from watching them. They never got along. So that was a weird pairing in general to ever do, to put Tiger and Phil together to work together, especially when they have entirely different game plans going on. So
the world wants to see Tiger and Phil together. Like, yeah, I mean, we wanted to see it, but it turns out it's not effective at all. So,
no, you know, you do what's effective to win. Now it's effective for the ratings. So, you know, whatever. But then, of course, things seem to kind of fall apart for Phil after that. We start seeing more behind the curtain of Phil's image, betting on the course, throwing odds up with Gary McCord when he's up in the tower. I mean, Phil.
Yeah, you could see where the PR team works overtime for Phil Mickelson starting immediately after the major championships start flowing in. It's funny how that works. That's the classic P. Diddy, mo money, mo problems right there, I think, for Phil Mickelson is what he ran into about this point in the book in his career.
Yeah, and just him really trying to take charge of his image and hiring someone to run his image for him. And because he was really kind of under attack, he was a hated athlete. It seems like there's a great dichotomy between the Phil we see on course and the Phil. Then there's like a couple other Phils that everybody sees not on the course. And I don't know which Phil is the right Phil yet.
That is well put. Yeah, because the one I always saw growing up in referencing the autograph piece, this book, which I'm very closely tied to, as you know, Mike, Golf Autographs for Life here. It was always Phil signing every single autograph. I can't even tell you how many Phil autographs I had because he's so freaking easy to get. He went all the way down the line forever. And we come to learn that was very intentional. That was to make him look like the good guy and pit him up against a Tiger Woods, Mike, who if he walked through a line of about 500 kids after playing his round, he'd sign about 8 to 10 autographs. I was never that lucky kid growing up, and I watched him sign the kids to the left of me and the kids to the right of me and not me, whereas Phil got every single one. It was interesting to see how that rivalry pitted itself and how conscious Phil was about his image at this point, too.
Yeah, Phil was so conscious of his image that Alan Shipnuck, while writing this book, as we find out, was possibly offered a bribe.
Yeah, I didn't honestly think that'd be part of the equation, but here we are. I can't say I'm totally surprised when I read that headline. Yeah,
that was not entirely surprising, but you know, especially with everything else we've been hearing recently about Phil, I don't think anything is really too surprising. I think maybe what was the most surprising was how little Phil listened to Bones on the course, his caddy Jim McKay, and giving him the ability to tell him no, but then being able to not listen to him still. So.
Yes, he gave Bones, one veto a year. And even then, it wasn't always useful. Apparently, Bones couldn't turn down a bad shot idea from Phil if it wasn't in the continental United States. So there were a lot of stipulations to the caddy-player relationship as long as that went. I tell you, I mean, the veto that Bones wants is what ended Chapter 10, Mike. And that was the driver off the 72nd hole at Wingfoot at that 2006 US Open. You remember he just needed a par to win par to win, bogey for a playoff, Mike, and then all of a sudden Phil pulls the driver and everything goes to shit.
One of the most epic blowups we have ever seen, rivaling maybe, I think, still a bigger blowup than what we just saw at the PGA Championship last month.
Yeah, really, little Mito Pereira vibe there, too. It was, you know, Phil hits the drive dead left. He goes, oh, no. And you hear it loud and clear when you're watching at home. And then Shipnuck goes into great detail over that double bogey collapse. Just an absolutely jarring moment for Phil, even with the major already in his back pocket. He is still capable of the greatest highlights and the greatest catastrophes at the same time. That seems to be another theme ringing through the book so far.
Yeah, it was particularly interesting at Wingfoot because we had seen a different Phil that was playing methodically and playing to win. And then on that 72nd hole at Wingfoot, we saw the old Phil again. So
interesting times. We're right in the throngs of it right now. That was chapters 8-10 in the Phil book. Pick it up for yourself by Alan Shipnuck if you haven't gotten it already. We're getting right into the meat of the story, I feel like. I sense a lot of scandal coming, and I can't wait to read more.
Yep, we'll have 11, 12, and 13 next week, so follow along with us as we continue through Alan Shipnuck's book, Phil. For now, let's switch over to Tuned In and share what we're getting into outside of the world of sports. You know, I'm going to send you a picture here, Alex, so that you can see just the sheer beauty that I got to experience in a kayak this weekend, because this was one of the most amazing places to go here in the Savannah area. This is a tupelo grove. Tupelo trees are used to make tupelo honey, which is one of the more expensive honeys out there in the world. It blossoms on these trees, only go out there for 10 days a year. And it's just gorgeous out there. It's very swampy, but it is hands down one of the most gorgeous places I've ever been.
Yeah, this is beautiful. By the way, I love the hats. Great hats.
Yes.
Nice work on the hat choice. You're kayaking through what looks like a movie set. It actually looks a little bit like a CGI. I'm not actually sure this is a real location in nature. You claim to be outside, but this looks 100% like a beautiful ground.
100% real.
How was the kayak? How was it out there?
Yeah, Ebenezer Creek, about an hour or so outside of Savannah. It's gorgeous place. You just kind of meander your way around in between the tupelo groves and the trees that are out there that are all growing right out of the water. And these trees are hollow in the middle as well. It's gorgeous.
It's not often that you get to have a kayaking experience where you're also pretty shaded too.
Yeah. We've done a couple different excursions here in the area, and this was hands down far and away the best kayaking excursion we've been on.
I love that. Check out Instagram, MWRINC, or maybe we'll throw one up on COL Podcast. Follow along for our journeys there. But that was a cool little tune into nature for you this past week. Mm-hmm. Mine was live music based. Always a cool thing when you get to see a show at a brand spanking new venue, which I did here in Austin recently. So I got to see Black Bear and Machine Gun Kelly at the brand new Moody Center here in Austin, Texas, Mike. So when you get in, you're always excited to see what the new venue looks like. And this was so new. There's only been a few shows there. It even had the new paint smell. So shout out to the Moody Center for being just an awesome music venue right in downtown Austin. Great show, nice seats. Clean bathrooms, no lines in the concession, you know, just everything you love to see when you go to a concert.
You know, a bathroom is really, to me, the cleanliness of a bathroom is what sets places apart.
Oh, yeah. Really. I have spent some time in Fenway Park bathrooms. We know what the opposite of clean looks like.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, it was good to be at the new Moody Center, shot MGK, and a lot more shows to come here in the live music capital of the world.
Awesome. Let's get into this week's guest. Alex, I know that you on occasion dabble in the golf trick shot realm and you fancy yourself to be mediocre at best, let's say.
Okay.
But I'm just going to let you know, you're like me to you when we compare you to this week's guest.
Oh, wow. That's quite insulting, but I'll take it anyway. Yeah. Fortunately, we've got the talented guy on our side as well, too, and he's joining us right now. Yeah, it's Coach Rusty joining here, and a fantastic conversation from a guy who has a very interesting background into not only how he found golf, but he found how he found trick shots and just kind of stumbled into this amazing life he's created for himself.
Yeah, we'll have that conversation with Coach Rusty in just a moment. But first, let's talk about our the Course of Life official on-course betting app, and that is $$$ D3 Golf. And we're getting into our own match that we're doing this week that you played your half of this match remotely. We're able to play these remotely, and you were able to play this weekend. I'm playing next weekend. And you did your 18 holes as part of a 36-hole stretch in 18 hours.
I went nuts this past weekend. It was a wonderful coincidence of events that got me two tight tee times. So all of a sudden, I was playing 36 holes in 18 hours. But when you play two rounds, that's just the opportunity to play more D3 matches. So I challenged you, and it's super easy to challenge your friends anywhere, no matter what course you're playing. That's right. I can play my course in Texas. You can play your course in Georgia, and we can have an evenly scored match based on our handicaps. So check out the D3 Golf app, download it today, and challenge us. Find myself, Alex, Michael, Course of Life Alex, MWRINC on the D3 Golf app, and challenge us today. We can play for real money, and we can have a great time on the course just like we do every weekend when we golf with the D3 app. Next up, we have a really cool guest. You've definitely seen him maybe at the 16th hole at Waste Management, or you just love his crazy trick shot content or wacky golf shots altogether. Chances are the video that you saw was made by this guy. It's Ryan Rustin, aka Coach Rusty, joining the Course of Life. Coach, how are we doing today?
Excellent, excellent. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me. Pumped to be on the show.
Absolutely. Great to have you as well, too. Big times in the world of golf. There's lots going on, but I'm always enjoying your content and have been for a while. I'm curious what your golf background is. Was it golf always for you? You play a lot of other sports growing up. What path led you to the game?
Yeah, no, I always had a golf club in my hand since I could walk, because my father, my biological father, was a huge golfer, and he was an identical triplet, and his other brother and my cousin, who's 9 days older than me, were all golfers. So I always played golf. I never really took it seriously till later in life. I played baseball, I skateboarded, and I raced motocross pretty seriously.
Nice.
For the first quarter of my life, you could say. And I really started to take a liking to golf right around high school. I stopped racing motocross as heavily and kind of fell in love with the idea of making the high school team for golf. So I kind of became buddies with everybody on the high school golf team, and then a couple other guys that were trying to make it. Tried out eventually, never made the team. Tried out my senior year. Just wasn't good enough. Those boys were pretty good golfers, but that's really when I started kind of taking it seriously. And
very interesting. That story is not too far off from your buddy Ricky too, who we'll talk about in a little bit. It's funny you bring up the motocross background. What was the skateboard skill level? I could only like ollie about an inch off the ground and get on maybe a small half pipe or quarter pipe. That was about the extent of my skateboard skills.
Yeah, I think I was actually pretty good. For a non-professional, non-sponsored skater, I'd say I was pretty solid. I had a really good bag of tricks. I could skate transition and street, and pretty much nice. Every day after school. And I still got a skateboard. I still get after it every now and then. But yeah, it was a good time.
Nice. I'm curious. So the golf background. Okay. So you tried out in school. You'd always kind of been a casual player, it sounds like. What was golf for you? Did it ever really be serious and competitive, or was it always kind of like the goofy golf that we see in your content now?
Yeah. So it's a long story, and I'll give it to you, but,
yeah, we're here for it.
I hate to cut my story short, so I'll give you the full story, but, It was about a week after I graduated high school, my father had passed away, which was pretty tough. He was like my best bud. Fortunately, my stepdad Dave's in my life, and I call him dad because he's been in my life since two. So I was very fortunate to have two dads, and he was there for me throughout it. But when my dad passed away, I went through a pretty rough 2-year phase. I ended up not going to university. I went to community college. kind of floated around for 2 years and nothing was really making me happy. And I noticed that the happiest I would ever be was when I was playing golf. And so I was on Facebook one evening and I saw this ad for a school called the Golf Academy of America. And like, first of all, I'm not a huge advocate of any college that is putting advertisements on Facebook, but now I am, because I made the decision to go to this school where you basically do like a PGM program and you're playing tournaments every week along the way. So my idea was, you know, I want my career to be in golf. I didn't know if it would be playing, if it would be teaching, if it would be on the business side of things. And then right around the time when I finished school, I tried like a couple little mini tours. You know, I was working in pro shops. My idea was I wanted to be a general manager one day, like a young general manager at a golf course.
Sounds like a stand-up career in the game. Yeah. Pretty respectable. Yeah.
Around it, you know, I just love the game of golf, and it was the only thing that made me happy. But none of that really worked out. I when I was 22, I actually had my son, which was obviously unexpected, and I was very young. And it turned out to be the best thing in my whole life. You know, after losing my father, I wanted to be a dad so bad. And it turns out I would become one at a young age. And, you know, when that happened, I kind of had to put golf on the back burner because, you know, it wasn't really paying the bills the way I needed it to. And so I kind of fell off of it for a few years. I was working construction. I was a master installer for Hardie Board in all of Central Florida for all the new residential builders. And, you know, that I actually really, really enjoyed that job. And I feel like if I wasn't in golf now, I could actually go back and start a new construction company. But did that for a couple of years. And then I got hurt at work, which was I almost lost my thumb. And when that happened, it was kind of crazy. I had no job. I couldn't go back to work because of insurance purposes and blah, blah, blah. And I saw an opening for a position as a golf instructor for Mitchell Spearman, who's a top 100 professional, at his Golf Channel Academy locations. So I ended up taking that position in Virginia back home. I was in Florida before all this. And,
Nice. So you moved and everything for the teaching.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Moved back to Virginia where I'm originally from. And, started teaching golf, and I got back into golf and I started to get happy again. And I was teaching full time. And if you know anything about golf instruction, it can get a little boring. You know, you can play endless amounts of golf. You can have endless amounts of time on the range in between lessons. And that's when I decided to kind of use my time differently. I saw this video of a guy in France. His name's Ramon Bachu, and he was doing golf tricks, like juggling the golf ball on the wedge. And I thought it was the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yep.
And I was like, you know what? I'm going to try that. I'm going to see if I can do a couple tricks. I learned a couple of the tricks he was doing, and then it kind of snowballed. It was like, okay, I'm going to learn this next one. I'm going to learn this next one. And then eventually it came down to the point where it was like, I learned how to do every trick this guy's doing. And it's like, okay, well, why aren't we filming it? And that's when I kind of got into posting a couple little videos on social media. You know, they would, if you use the right hashtags, different pages would maybe see it and you would get a repost. And whenever I got a repost, I was like, holy shit, pardon my French.
But very cool.
Like,
yeah, no, that's a neat growth pattern, because a lot of people in your shoes kind of roll into the content as it comes, but you kind of already perfected a little main batch of tricks. You kind of already had the arsenal. And then at that moment is when you started filming.
You know, you can look back on my first videos and you can tell I was not any good at it. It looked rough. Nothing was smooth. The videos were kind of lame, poor quality, but I just loved doing it. And I remember we had this little indoor facility and I would wrap up lessons in the winter around like 9 p.m. And then after that, I would go to the grocery store, get some food, couple drinks, go back up to my indoor facility at the country club. And I would be in there from, you know, 10 p.m. till 2 a.m. just trying to work on like little tricks. And, you know, at this time it wasn't ever anything I saw as like becoming a career path. It was just something I truly enjoyed doing. It was like, I'm doing things with a golf club that are super fun and creative. I've always been a creative guy. And so to have like a little creative outlet while having fun with a golf club in my hand was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. And those are sleeping hours too. So shout out to you for the drive to get that done after a day of work as well.
And you know, that drive still remains, you know, I absolutely love it. So, you know, it snowballed from there. I kept posting on social media and I started getting followers and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then, you know, the age of the influencer kind of came upon us at the same time. And I slowly saw myself possibly becoming one. And then, you know, next thing you know, I got my first branded deal opportunity, which I thought was just the coolest thing in the world. And at that point, it was like, well, like if I can make this amount of money off one thing, why not try to continue doing this like over and over and over? And so then I just kind of figured out a way to monetize it. I mean, in regards to that part of the story, that's the condensed version, but it's just continued to snowball from there. And we've been able to make it a career. So it's been great.
Very cool. And Coach Rusty, the name specifically, obviously must stem from the last name, but how did that get given to you when you were teaching?
Yeah, it's so funny. I ran a lot of the junior programs for Mitchell Spearman, and my students would always call me Coach Rusty. My last name's Rust, and a lot of people would call me Rusty. And I guess one student overheard one of my bosses calling me Rusty, then everyone just started calling me Coach Rusty. So it really derives from my junior golfers that I was teaching about 6 years ago, which is pretty cool.
Nice. All right, cool. So let's get to the trick shot details before we get into your life and some of the cool things you've done with this content. Just kind of some rapid fire here. I guess first thought is one specific trick shot that took off number-wise, whether it was that one that got the first big repost or got you the first branded deal. Is there one specifically that was like maybe the turning point moment for your content career?
Yeah, I think there was one video. I was at Loudoun Golf and Country Club, which was right down the road from the house I grew up in Virginia. And I had, I was like 25 probably at the time. And I had a couple of the kids that were on the high school team are always at the golf course. And I told one of them, he was like kind of a fan at the time. And I said, hey man, you want to come help me with a trick shot? And so I had him drive a golf cart kind of like close to a green, not on the green, but close to a green. And so he was driving and I was hanging off the side, kind of juggling the golf ball while we were riding. And then I kind of pop it up in the air from about 20 yards away and it rolls into the hole. And, you know, now if you were to post that trick shot, it's like, okay, cool, because the bar has been set so high. But at the time, right, that was something that's never been done. And so that got picked up by a ton of pages. It got posted on, you know, World Star Hip Hop, Bleacher Report, ESPN, SportsCenter, all the House of Highlights, all the big, big names. And that was like my first big, like, viral video. You know, I had people direct messaging me to get the licensing rights to it. And that's when I realized like, okay, there's money in content. And there's also a huge possibility to scale off of reposts on big pages. So that would always give you the drive to kind of, you know, continue to make something really just out of this world so you could get reposted.
Nice. And now, I mean, we've seen hundreds, maybe if not thousands of iterations on Coach_Rusty on Instagram, but I'm curious now, the ideas are they, I know at the beginning, they all came from you and you did a little research yourself, but what percentage of maybe content ideas come from maybe fans on Instagram, or are they still mostly coming from yourself?
Yeah, I would say 0.05% comes from anyone else. I've always been very true to being creative. I also am not a huge fan of, you know, taking something somebody else has done. I mean, there's going to be certain situations where when you're creating golf content in general, things are going to look very, very similar.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
You know, it's going to be. But when it comes to my trick shots, you know, I want to make sure that it's something that no one's ever thought of, no one's ever done. Obviously, some of them will look like others, but it really comes from just sleepless nights, quiet car rides, just sitting with me and my thoughts and trying to come up with cool stuff. And yeah, it was obviously easier because the bar was lower back in the day. So now to be creative with trick shots and to meet the expectations of my audience, you have to put a little more time in. It's a little more difficult, but I love that part. That's truly my favorite part of all of this, is conceptualizing and then seeing if you can make it work.
Yeah, the dedication shines through, and I can tell because the moment when you finally execute, you go nuts, and that makes me tell it's authentic. I appreciate that. Let's get into a little bit of the life of Coach Rusty here. Let's shout out a mutual friend who I got to meet last year as well, who'd been on the podcast, talking about Tisha Aylin, of course, who you've done a lot of really cool content with, specifically at Topgolf and many other places as well. What's your favorite part about working with her? Her energy is just like completely infectious.
Yeah. We match each other really well. You know, it's so funny. Her and I actually had a shaky start when it came to our, like, getting to know each other. It was kind of strange. Like, I never would have thought after we first met that we would become so tight. I mean, we're best buds, and it's a funny story, and that's for another time. But working with her is truly a special experience, because she's just like me in the sense that she has a lot of energy. She truly loves what she does. She's passionate about what she does. She's got endless creativity, endless talent, and you know, we work so well together, especially in these like high pressure situations where you need to kind of produce. We just kind of help each other to make it work. And every time we've been together, everything's been a success. So when it comes to, you know, the workplace relationship, it's fantastic. But then to be such good friends on top of that is really great. And it just makes everything always special when we get together, for sure.
Yeah, there's a Topgolf content where I think she hit off a wood block from the ground floor at Topgolf, and you were way up there and hit an absolute bomb lefty drive that's sticking out for me. I'll make a note to maybe back pocket that original story for our second chat, but I'll let that one go. The thing I wanted to really catch up with you on, though, is the 16th hole I'm talking Saturday morning specifically, because I vividly remember seeing you out there showing off your skills. I just want you to set the scene. We talk about it a lot on the podcast, and try and put into words what that setting is like at TPC Scottsdale for the Saturday morning crowd as they wait for the action to happen at the par three. It's truly unlike any other spectacle in sports, and you got to be right in the middle of it.
Yeah. Incredible. I mean, working with Waste Management and Phoenix Open has been unreal. It's something I never thought would happen in the first place, but it did. And I'm so thankful for that. But, you know, we've done that event a few times, and I've now done trick shots inside the 16th hole twice, and we'll kind of bring it back to the first time I did it. And, you know, we were there creating content for Waste Management, and the idea of going into 16 wasn't even really a possibility in my mind. I didn't think that was even going to be allowed, but I wanted to do it so badly. So I asked Sam Sternberg, who's with CAA, and I was like, "Hey, man, like, do you think we can get inside 16 during
the practice?" Ask, right?
Yeah, like, what if you're not asking, you're not trying. So I asked, and sure enough, he was like, "Yeah, like, of course." And I was like, Are you kidding me? Like, no way. So, you know, to set the scene, we're getting ready to go in. The Breakfast Club run, we kind of captured content on that before we went into the stadium itself. And then we kind of all met up right by the entrance where the players walk up the tunnel to the tee box. And it's already super loud. It's like 7 a.m. Sun's coming up. People are in there, you know, just going wild. There's music playing, and we're walking up this tunnel, and it's just loud. It's roaring. It's like, you know, like gladiator vibes, you know,
and I feel chills here, and I'm just listening to you tell a story. Yeah.
So you finally get up through the tunnel and you get on the tee box, and then boom, you're in the Coliseum, and it's unreal. And then there I was with my wedge in a golf club, and I was kind of afraid. I started doing kind of some juggle videos on the tee box away from like the main crowd by the green. And then Tish and I, we kind of just slowly started inching closer and closer to the green, and it kept getting louder and louder, and people saw what we were doing from afar. And then obviously once we got up towards the green, they were fully engaged. So I put on like a little show juggling. And then the one thing I did that was, I'm so glad I did it. I had a backpack with me, and inside my backpack, I had these yellow foam golf balls. Right. And I was thinking, I was like, how cool would it be, you know, to like hit a golf ball up into the stands and like have someone catch it. Like, they'd probably like that. Right.
Oh yeah.
And if it was allowed, but I said, you know what, I'm just gonna do it anyway. So I put a ball down, I hit like a little 60 degree flop shot up into the stands, and someone catches it. And I thought it was funny, like, it was cool, one time thing. The next thing you know, the crowd starts roaring, throw it back. So they throw it back. And then from there, I start realizing, like, we're just gonna do this for the next 15, 20 minutes. We're just gonna hit shots. So I was like hitting them out of the air. People were catching them. I was doing some juggles, some trick shots, hitting them up in the air. Like the ball out of the air on the volley, people were catching it, just loving it. And it was truly an electric feeling. I mean, to be able to do what I am so passionate about doing, what I've been working on for so long in a setting like that with so many people around it, it really, I mean, it made me so emotional. When we finally wrapped up, I was with Jess and Sean from DGC, and I just gave Jess a big hug, and I basically like cried in her arms, just saying like how appreciative I was and how special of a moment that was. And it's something I'll remember until the day I die, because I mean, you know, not many people can do what I do, and not many people ever even get the opportunity to set foot in there. So it was truly special. It's always going to be very memorable. And I'm grateful for everybody that helped make that become a reality, because that's just, it's just insane. So we ran it back. We ran it back this year. We did it again, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, it really doesn't get much better than 16 on a weekend at a Waste Management. So,
oh yeah, such a cool experience. And I'm glad you got to highlight that. And you know, it's funny because you've got all the followers, but maybe that was the time when you actually really got to hear the noise of them all, and that was a neat moment. Yeah,
definitely.
Coach Rusty again joining us, Coach_Rusty on Instagram. Let's just get to a few quick shot questions as well too, because there's a few more things I absolutely have to ask about before we let you go. First, want to talk quickly about your friendship and relationship with Ricky Fowler through Cobra Puma. You mentioned your story. It's eerily similar to Ricky's. I don't know how much time you've had to share with him and tell that, but what's it been like spending time with him?
Yeah, it's been great. You know, it's so funny because I did race motocross and I knew he raced motocross, and I would go to a lot of tournaments back in the day before all of this stuff, before I knew Ricky, before I was a trick shot guy. And I would always kind of chirp Ricky and be like, hey, like, when are you ready for a motocross race? Just like chirping at him like a random fan, right?
I'm
and
sure he would appreciate that, yeah.
He would always respond. He would be like, I'm ready, whatever. And then, you know, fast forward, you know, 10 years down the road, and now I'm a Cobra Puma athlete, and you know, I get to spend a lot of time with him firsthand, and we've talked a little bit about motocross, and we've had some time to kind of hit some shots together. I will tell you my favorite Ricky Fowler story ever. We were at a, I think it's called a Drive Shack.
Yes, mm-hmm.
We were
Top Golf, similar concept. Yeah,
not the Top Golf, way better. Shout out to Top Golf. Oh, anyways, yeah. I was forced to be at a Drive Shack, and Ricky Fowler was there, and Drive Shack has these, their targets are like these foam poles, and Ricky and I were having like a flop shot challenge to see who could hit the top of the foam pole first. And it was probably about a 60-yard shot. I'm proud to say I beat Ricky Fowler on that shot. I don't think he liked it. I don't think he appreciated it too much.
Yeah, a rare L with the wedge for Ricky Fowler.
The wedge from Fowler for sure. But yeah, we've had an opportunity to hang out a ton. He's a stand-up guy. You know, he's full of energy as well. He's a new dad. His family's beautiful. I mean, you can't hate on the guy. He's done so much for the game of golf, and he's someone I always looked up to. So now I'm fortunate enough to have the opportunity to spend some time with him for sure.
Definitely want to shout out where this all happens now too. The Coach Rusty content. You have officially lived out the Rob Dyrdek fantasy factory dream that every person my age watching MTV growing up had in their life. Tell everyone about the Creation Station and how that got purchased.
Yes, I love how the name's getting recognized. Coach's Creation Station. So I've always, I wouldn't say struggled, but kind of had a small issue with being able to kind of just create content when I want and to do whatever I want without limitations. Because you're always kind of limited by the facilities that you're creating at.
Right.
And, you know, I've always wanted to have my own space where I could just create endlessly and whenever I want and do whatever I want. No limits. And because I've got so much going on in my brain that I just am incapable of doing it certain places. So we've rented out this warehouse. It's about 1,500 square feet. You've got office space and obviously warehouse space. And the idea is, you know, I really want to use it as my studio to kind of create really fun and engaging content. I've been wanting to push on YouTube for quite some time, but there's so many people on YouTube doing very similar things. And I wanted to be able to have my own space to kind of create things that are different.
Unique space too.
Yes, exactly. So I wanted something that's unique and that's obviously like an attachment to my brand. Like as soon as you see this spot, you know it's Coach Rusty. You know it's the Creation Station. And that's definitely something I've wanted. So the idea is, you know, have a couch, TV, entertainment area, some games, you know, put some dartboards, pinball, golden tee in one area, then have the office with the, you know, podcast studio, editing studio, photo shoot bay for new products coming out. And then obviously in the warehouse space, we're going to try to get a big putting green in here shortly. We're working on getting a new simulator in here. And then ultimately just having a big open space to hit cool trick shots and stuff like that as well. So there's going to be just endless opportunity here. And I ultimately the goal is to make it a place that everybody wants to come to. And if they can't come, ultimately they want to watch the content that's coming out of it. So I'm really excited for it. It's a work in progress. I'm sitting in here right now, just kind of chilling. And yeah, it's a good spot.
Yeah, man, you're living the dream. Keep posting about the creation station. I want to see more of the place as it develops, for sure. I am curious with the trick shots, the short drives, the PSGA, Short Drive Association. Well, what part of the club are you hitting those short drives with? How does that work scientifically?
You're just catching it on the very bottom of the face, I would say. Sometimes even the bottom of the club head. So
under, yeah.
It's something I'm trying to push. Maybe there will be a pro short drive championship in the near future. If there is, I'm here for it.
I mean, you've done a lot of one club golfing. I'm curious, one club to shoot the best 18 hole score. What's your one club you pick?
I would probably have to say, I feel like I could get a lot done with a 6 iron. I feel like I could.
Yeah, you know? that seems to be the versatile one. 6, 7, something along those lines. And then we always wrap with our 19th hole question, Coach Rusty. You get in after a round on the course and you get into your favorite clubhouse or 19th hole. What's your go-to order, your favorite meal and drink to order?
Favorite meal and drink? Right now, probably a steak and a Michelob Ultra. I'm a big steak guy now. So either that, or if they got a good ahi tuna, sign me up.
Oh, nice. I like that. That's an exquisite choice. I'll go with the surf and turf all day. Good stuff. Hey, Coach Rusty, thank you so much for hopping on the Course of Life. Really appreciate following your journey. Can't wait to see what happens with the creation station as well. And best of luck with the content as well.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And we're back. Great to hear from Coach Rusty. That his creation station,
yes.
A little fantasy factory. That is quite impressive.
Living the dream, pretty much, is what I called that. He just gets to make content in a gigantic warehouse and just smash a golf ball off walls and ceilings and do whatever he wants. That's a really cool add to the Coach Rusty business endeavors. It was neat having him on, and always a great follow, Coach_Rusty on Instagram. We'll be sure to stay in touch with him because he is always creating. He never runs out of trick shots. It's amazing. I thought there was really only a set of about maybe 10 or 15 that were possible, and this guy proves that there's a lot more in the spectrum. So be sure to follow Coach Rusty. And if you like what you're hearing from this conversation or any other interview or episode, be sure to subscribe to Course of Life wherever you're listening right now.
Alex, how's your heart after last week? How are your emotions?
I mean, after golf games, after everything else in the world of sports is not good. it was a collapse for sure. I'm not going to say it was a choke job, but the Celtics being up 2-1 in the NBA Finals and losing 4-2, that's definitely quantifies itself as a collapse. It was pretty heartbreaking, and the Warriors were just flat out better. It stinks when you get beat, but it's even worse when you get beat. Maybe slightly more acceptable when you just get beat by a better team, and the Warriors proved that. 4 rings in 8 seasons for the official dynasty of the NBA. Yeah, heartbroken is the word.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you a question here as a very casual basketball fan that I am.
Yeah.
Who would you rather have on your team?
Okay.
LeBron or Steph Curry?
Oh, that's a good question. Are we saying right now, both of them at their ages right now?
I think that's an easier question to answer if we're talking about right now, right? Yeah. I think we're saying right now is Steph Curry.
If you pick them both at their peak, I think that's a 50-50 because LeBron is maybe admittedly doing a lot more for the other four guys out on the floor. As amazing as Steph Curry's passing has gotten in recent years, to boot, he's the greatest shooter of all time. I think LeBron's probably doing more for the other four guys out on the floor with him. And if you're going peak versus peak, but right now the answer is Steph Curry, because I watched it with my own eyes. Mike, that man can't miss. He takes shots from wherever he wants and no one questions him. He is not human. Unbelievable.
It's crazy. That's hashtag always end with food.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Thanks to our friends at Toasty Snacks, toasty.com/COL. I mentioned the 36 holes in 18 hours. Something very funny happened. It's now time for me to send you a picture live, Mike, okay? Because I had gotten to the golf club at Star Ranch and I'd gotten to the par 3 7th, and all of a sudden I came around the corner to the cart path. And I just sent you this picture right now. I'm going to post it on our Instagram, COL podcast as well too. But there is a pizza place that is so mind-numbingly close. I wish I'd had the foresight to know it was there, because I think I have to go back next time and do an on-the-course pizza order. What's the like weirdest, you know, food restaurant placement you've ever seen on the course? Because that was definitely high on the list for me, but it was a welcome sight nonetheless.
I haven't seen too many weird things. There is a, it's not really next to the course. It's like within walking, you could walk there from the parking lot of the course. There is a seafood restaurant in a course nearby here in Savannah. Nice.
That is a random combo, yes.
But I mean, it's not really at the course. It's not nearly as close to the course as this, this Marco's Pizza is.
Yeah, so, you know Marco's. You're familiar.
Yeah, there's a bunch here in the Savannah area. I thought they were a local chain here, but I was obviously wrong.
Yeah, so 7th Tee Star Ranch. If you're in Texas, I think a couple holes in advance, I'm gonna have to do this content and place the order, and then someone's gonna have to film me hopping the fence and running into the front door at Marco's and picking up my order before I hit my tee shot. That's a video in the making. So look forward to that in the future. The next time I hit that course.
Yep. For food for me this week, you know, we had some friends in town for the entire week, and one of them is a big baker. Okay. They do more cakes than I do. So they decided to, the wife and her best friend who were here, they decided to make a nectarine Bellini cake.
Wow. Ooh la la. Wow.
Yeah. Nice. I cannot begin to explain how fantastic this cake was.
Yeah, Bellini, wonderful fruity flavored cocktail that pairs nicely in any sort of dessert form, and nectarines too. We're really hitting some nice flavor profiles there.
Was going to do peaches, but they couldn't find any peaches that were ripe and ready to go. Mm. So they found nectarines instead. So it was a kind of almond flavored sponge with a Prosecco syrup soak that the sponge got when it came out of the oven, and then a kind of like nectarine Prosecco, like jam that you almost made sort of filling, and Chantilly cream. And it was spectacular. I cannot explain how good this cake is.
Yeah. What a delight. Nice end of the day there. Very impressive stuff. Good stuff. That was Always End With Food. You can check out Always End With Food Pod on Instagram as well too, for our food content. Be sure to follow us on IG. And tune in and subscribe right now, because we heard what you liked and you made it all the way to the end of this episode. So we'll see you next week on The Course of Life.